A61. Number 19B.
All right. Let's see that clear. A truth may not be a truth, a scientific truth. It becomes only a scientific truth when you put it into a wider context. Or even worse than that, an untrue statement or an incorrect statement becomes suddenly a correct statement when you put it into a wider frame of reference. Do you know what I say? This is terrific, huh? Can you see that the whole discussion in the Christian Science movement is just fooling around with these things? That you have statements that are true and they are not true. And you have statements that are wrong and they are believed to be wrong and they are true. It all depends in which context you put it. If your context is wide enough or not. The more you widen out the context within you consider a statement, the more that statement becomes a scientific truth. Or it becomes a truth when before it has been an incorrect statement. Take this. I make a statement and say spirit senses are without pain. This is an incorrect statement. Because soul's senses are without pain. Yes? That very statement, when put into the context here of a paragraph, is no more incorrect. It's now correct. Without changing the statement, the incorrect becomes correct. Through what? By putting it into a higher frame of reference. Just as we have seen, that according to the level of consciousness in which we contemplate something, something is right or wrong. Do you see what it means? It means that as long as we deal in metaphysics with isolated statements, what we call atomistic thinking, there is no scientific truth in it. Yes?
When you teach children how to do subtraction, you tell them that you can't subtract a larger number from a smaller number. But as soon as you widen the context to assume negative numbers and zero, then you can do it.
And you can do it, huh?
So there's an example of that's just a simple...
Yeah? That shows that when you widen... Did you get it? The children who don't know minus numbers, only plus numbers, you teach them that you cannot subtract a bigger number from a smaller number. But the moment you introduce them to a wider frame of reference, namely to numbers that are plus and minus, therefore a bigger frame, then you can subtract a bigger number from a smaller number. Can you see what happens, what has happened with the textbook? What has happened with the statements of the textbook? Every statement of the textbook is correct. We know that. All right, we take them as an axiom. Every statement of the textbook is correct. As long as you leave those statements as isolated statements, they are not scientific truths. They are not scientific truths. They only become scientific truths when they are put into the whole system. Only then they are true. That has been forgotten absolutely. That has never been considered. You see, for the religious thought it's obvious. You have the aphorisms. The whole religious teaching since thousands of years has been done on the basis of aphorisms. You know what aphorisms is? Single true statement, single wisdom statements. Huh? Just one verse. Huh? And it's so beautiful, huh? And so meaningful, one verse. And that's the way people have been taught up to the present age in religion. And therefore one has taken over that attitude and that method of thinking into the Christian Science textbook. But the Christian Science textbook is not the omnium gatherum of aphorisms. Huh? What is that to love? Yeah. Yeah. Don't you say an omnium gatherum of aphorisms?
There's a way to put it, because that's what usually what it's treated as, and that's what the lesson sermon is, really always juggling around from things out of context into a...
Absolutely, huh? Yeah?
We couldn't understand.
You see? And not only that, the Christian scientists were trained in it, huh? Just as you said, huh? Through the lesson sermons, hear a sentence on page 325, and then another sentence on page 73, and then another sentence on 257, huh? Then another sentence out of page 173. Hmm? Can you see? This is like having a lot of sentences and you put just a few into a bucket and say, take them out. Huh? Can you see? This is not... These statements were true statements, but they are not scientific truths. They only become scientific truths and reasonable and able to be interpreted when put into a context, what we call into the structure of the whole teaching. If you say to a religionist, you know, a truth is not yet a scientific truth, he says, we have to put you somewhere, huh? You're not quite sane up here, huh? A truth is a truth, huh? Wouldn't you think that they answer you, a truth is a truth? A truth cannot be made a non-truth. Yes, it can. Huh? Just as what appears to be untrue or a false statement, like spirit senses are without pain, this is a false statement per se, but in the context it's a true statement. Isn't it terrific? Can you see where I want to lead you? I want to lead you somewhere absolutely different than anybody else in the world. There's nobody in the world who wants to lead you where I want to lead you. I want to lead you not to truth. I want to lead you to structured truth. And every truth has its place within the whole. And only there it's true. All the rest is not true. It's not true. They are just statements, nothing more. They don't mean very much. They only mean as much as your belief in it is worthwhile, but not as the truth is worthwhile. Do you see that the new age is coming on? It's a new age. Just as we have seen how in Christian Science we had the age of the argumentation period, the pre-Kimball period, and then the Kimball period, and then the Bicknell Young period, and then the Dorley period, we're coming to a new age. The whole development goes forward. You can't hold it back. You can't hold it back. And it's so simple. It's only a matter to awake to it. It's nothing complicated. And I show you this, I show you this, I show you this, until it seems that it's absolutely not natural, until you feel I have only always known it, that I have you there where I want you. Well, you see, I knew that before Max told me. Huh? Then I have achieved it. Huh? Yeah. All right. Let's take another one. Aha. Yeah. Let's take 274. Well, this is too difficult. I should ask you now, did you find references that were difficult to interpret? No? So it means that you could explain every reference. Oh, no. All right, wait a minute, yes?
I do have a question on that last one. What struck my eye when I first read it, that's on page 214, 26, line 27, there's a but, that's 214. Line 27, there's a but. The real sight or sense is not lost.
Yes.
And then a little further down on 30, yeah. She says, and there are no other real senses.
Yeah.
So it didn't seem to be a question to me when she used spirit senses.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes. Absolutely, yeah.
Well, yeah. That's what I had in mind.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, that makes sense, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes? Do you have your list of...
Yeah, I kept notes as I went along, but you've been explaining them. One here, this is an example, what I wrote down was on page 306, line 13.
Page?
306.
306.
Line 13.
Line 13.
You see, she says, if life or soul and its representative, man, unite for a period and then are separated as by the law of divorce to be brought together again at some uncertain future time. Well, see, now that we've talked, I would probably be able to have more insight into it.
Yes.
At home when I was doing it, I couldn't figure it out.
Yes, yes. We couldn't figure out what? Why she uses soul?
She seems to use life or soul interchangeably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As if it didn't make any difference.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
Of course, she uses representative, which goes with soul, but then at home I thought, well, how does that go with life?
Yes. Why do you feel that, although we haven't yet taken life, why do you feel that she says life or soul?
Well, as I read along here, let me finish reading it to myself.
Yes.
Well, she talks about uncertain future time, which would be the counterfeit of life.
Yes.
And then she talks about immortality, which is an idea of life.
Or of soul.
Yeah, but you can do both.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's right, we're in soul. But man cannot be separated for an instant from God if man reflects God.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, gosh, that has principle and life and spirit.
When I listen to you, I have a nice word game.
Well, now, wait a minute, the last sentence.
Though, I wait a minute, yes.
Thus, science proves man's existence to be intact. Well, that would be a sense of life.
That would be a sense of life, yeah. Well, there is opinion in it, which would be a sense of mind, and there is a proof in it, which is a sense of principle.
Well, okay, now really.
Yeah? Now, where are we now? Huh? We are now in the word game. Now, you analyze now exactly the synonymous term as they have analyzed it over the last 30 years.
Yeah.
A word game. Huh? Now, let's get away from that.
Okay.
Now, Amadeen, now, what have you learned now? How to approach such a subject? Now, yeah. You have learned that, huh? Now, how would you go about? Instead of having a word game and say, well, representative is soul, and man is truth, and period is life, and separated is counterfeit of love, and law is mind, and divorce is counterfeit of principle. Can you see something which is not really to laugh about, or we should laugh about it? Can you see the tragedy? What is the subject in here? Subject here? Yeah? Mm-hmm. So follow up. You're now interested, why Mrs. Eddy uses life and soul, huh?
Yes.
Why doesn't she use love and life, or why doesn't she use spirit and principle, huh? She uses two definite terms, synonymous terms, and there must be a reason, it must ring true. And we know that the synonymous term only answers a subject, that the subject rules the synonymous term, and not the other way around.
Well, she's saying, though, that soul is immortal. And therefore, I would assume that life is brought into this to help fortify the idea that soul is immortal.
Where does she have that soul is immortal?
Well, she's saying that she's trying to prove that we're not ever left without immortality.
Mm-hmm.
National proof of immortality.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's the subject, huh? Yeah.
And therefore, life would help fortify that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. See, she speaks here about... Let's read this awful long sentence. Huh? If life or soul and its representative man unite for a period, they unite for a period, and then are separated, so you have uniting and separating by a law of divorce, to be brought together again. Can you see? You leave it and you come back to it, huh? Unite for a period, then separate it, then be brought back again. Can you see the ups and downs, huh? What is ups and downs for, what is that term, the synonymous term of up and downs, of coming and going?
The opposite of soul.
Opposite of soul, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah? You see?
Can you?
Yeah. The instability, huh? Coming and going, yes. Uh-huh. All right. So you feel here that she is talking about life, huh? And that the belief is that life is something that comes and goes, huh? So she speaks about life and about the stability of soul.
Yeah. Hmm? Yeah.
Can you see?
Yeah.
Or the unchanging going on of soul, huh?
It's impossible for soul to experience a form of life that would be
unstable, yeah,
that would
come. Isn't it? Yeah. You see, can you make, you know, it's all over the world like this, it's not an exception. The students of Christian Science can no more read the textbook sensibly. They read it as terms. It's awful. They never can read it anymore and say, what is the subject? They read terms, they read words. We should read subject, you know. Our life is not made up of terms. Our life is a real tough life where we have to know how to handle life. Huh? Here we have a sense, my word, is life something that comes and goes? Is life something where suddenly at one moment says it's finished? Or is life something which says, oh, you afterwards you will come again into life, the life goes on afterwards? You know, these are a question of life and death in our everyday life. And we have to feel now, how do we tackle these arguments? Can you see? And can you see how easily we can handle such big questions, huh? Which says, well, is life coming and going? Huh? have it come into life, and then we go out of life, and then perhaps afterwards we come again into life? Huh? What is happening with us? Is that something that leaves us cold, or that is of no interest? No, this is terrifically interesting. It's our life. Huh? But if we know life and soul, we have the answer. I just have to know life and soul. Just have to know life, that is ever, and soul that says that which is ever doesn't come and go. I get the answer bang on, just with two synonymous terms. I don't need a long story. But the question you read in here is a life question. It's our life always. There's not one sentence in here which is not our life. And therefore, we must read that textbook as life propositions, as life questions, as deep-rooted life questions. But if you read it as words, it doesn't do a thing. And that is, you see, the question which we always can ask ourselves, why is it that this textbook is the answer to all life questions? And why is it that Christian Scientists for 40 years can read it and they don't move a little stone with it? They don't move anything with it. After 40 years, they are just at the very same point where they started, or even further back. Why is it that this book that contains such a powerful truth, the answer to everything, why doesn't it move the world? Why doesn't it?
Because I don't understand.
Well, because we read words.
We've been forced to read it this way for all these years.
Well.
Chained to the procedure that the church has established.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a trick here of the printed word that throws us.
Yeah.
If, for example, there could be something like a comma after life or something to make you pause, so that you realize she's talking about life, on the one hand, or soul and its representative man, on the other, you wouldn't start off the paragraph wrong.
Perhaps. Depends on the grammar.
Depends on how you read it. No. What you're saying.
Mm. Well. Yeah. So, can you start, really, read the textbook as that subject? Make it a duty, a habit. Make it a habit. Don't ask what the term means. Don't ask what the sentence means. Ask what is the life question in the paragraph, or the life question in two paragraphs. Huh? Actually, more than you see that two paragraphs and three paragraphs and then four paragraphs are always more and more connected, and that your frame of reference gets bigger and bigger, and that therefore one little sentence here gets a higher meaning the more we spread out the frame of reference. Then we read this as a life story, not as a metaphysical aphorisms and things like that. Somewhere we must be honest enough to say to ourselves, why haven't we moved the world with this mighty power, with this mighty truth? There must be somewhere a terrific big mistake. And the mistake is there what I said it to you. To see it in its connection. To see it as a life proposition, and not as a metaphysical treatise. It isn't a metaphysical treatise. It is life. Our very life is it. And it's funny that when one talks with people among us, you talk very naturally and say, look here, why is it that so and so and so? Huh? You state the problem. And you say, now give me the answer. Do you ever read the textbook also that way, that you say, here she states the problem, gives the answer? I don't think so. I think you read sentences.
No more.
No more? Huh? Tomorrow, principle.